All right, I'd like to welcome everybody to our Wednesday night get together. Tonight we have attorney Larry Beecraft, researcher, talk show host, Gary Thomason, and Sean O'Connor couldn't be with us at least at the beginning of the show. He's going to try to join us later. I'm Joe Bannister, kind of the guy that talks too much and coordinates all this stuff. We do welcome you. And so let's start with our prayer. You know, and government employees have to take an oath before God, and there was an oath taken in trials, and the least we can do is say a prayer to God, acknowledging that he's the source of all goodness. And so we begin. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen.
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 All right. So our resident gold mine, that's Larry Beecraft. He is a jewel. He's a precious stone. He's the guy that has tons of experience and really good memory. And so he's going to talk to us a little bit about how this movement came about, who were the people that stood out in front, took all the arrows, were taken down here and there. But somehow, some way, we try to keep carrying forward the truth as it pertains to the so-called tax movement or taxed honesty movement. Of course, it's part of a larger movement of just people that would like to keep in place or reestablish the rule of law. And I think we all, anyone that with a level head will agree that keeping the rule of law around is the safest way to go, as opposed to a mob rule or something where you know, the countries that have experienced revolutions that ended with people's heads being chopped off and things like that. So, Larry, can you give us a little history lesson on the people that came before us relating to this tax issue?
Well, it depends on how long you want me to talk about that. I would like to provide a background about it, this movement, at least what I know. I've got a lot of experience with this movement, been involved with it for a long time. But then, you know, I don't know that there's not going to be a whole lot of information that can be gleaned by talking about the history. But I would like to talk about also the problems and how we address them in the movement. But let me go ahead and start off, and I'll end up wherever I end up at whatever time. Years ago, decades ago now, I ran into a guy by the name of Bob Muncaster from Montgomery, Alabama. He happened to be somebody that had been involved in the tax movement, the freedom movement, for a long time by the time I first met him. You know, he had been roaming around with people like A.J. Porth. You know, there was a small group of, I guess you could call them patriots from the government's viewpoint. They'd be called malcontents back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And the men that were involved, the people that were involved back in those days, you know, they were raising kind of simplistic issues, you know, like rather than getting into a detailed study of the code, you know, these people weren't, these men weren't into, you know, going to the law library and developing legal arguments. You know, they were more, they would read the Constitution, look at what's going on in government, and develop some basic fundamental issues, you know, like Fifth Amendment tax returns. You know, so if you go back into the 70s, you know, people were involved, they were involved with this movement or into issues like that. You know, they were arguing about filing returns and, you know, the consequences of that. You know, John Kottmeyer got started in the early 70s. You know, I didn't get to meet John Kottmeyer until about 1984. But, you know, when I came along and started meeting these guys, you know, the movement was kind of small. I got involved with the movement because my educational background is in economics. You know, I thought that the real problem, I'd been educated by my dad's friends who were birchers, and I learned when I was in high school that, you know, there was a real problem with the Federal Reserve System. And, you know, based on what I knew as a result of reading Burke's materials when I was in high school, I went to school, college, and I got an economics degree. From there, I went on to become a lawyer. Spent 7 years at Stanford University. But when I got out, you know, I was kind of a right winger. And I started running into people that were, you know, in those types of circles. And so one of the first people that I really met that was associated with the tax movement was Tupper Saucy. He was the leader of the money issue movement back in the late 70s and the early 80s. You know, as a result of his involvement with the tax movement in the mid 80s, you know, he got prosecuted. Then he went on, he skipped for about 7 years, and then he got caught and spent some time in jail and then got out. But, you know, back in the early 80s, Tupper was really the man that was in charge of the money issue, heading up the money issue in this movement. Now, Tupper was associated with others involved in the tax movement, primarily the Golden Mean Society, which was Peggy Christensen up in Missoula, Montana. Now, the Golden Mean Society had a number of people that were, is that my, can y'all hear?
Yeah, I can hear you. We can hear you.
Okay, well, you know, the air conditioner came on. Maybe I ought to just take off my coat. But, you know, Tupper was associated with the Golden Mean Society, which had Charles Riley, Peggy Christensen, Tupper Saucy, and a couple of other people. And Peggy had ran the organization out of Missoula, Montana. They, you know, traveled the country. You know, they'd conduct seminars. You know, Peggy would run around and, you know, she would go to places like nuclear power plants, you know, where the workers were kind of wanting to try to go exempt on, you know, income tax withholding. You know, Charles Riley was mainly out west. He would conduct seminars, and Tupper Saucy was back here in the east. He lived up in Tennessee, you know, the county next north of me in Tennessee. Mont Eagle, lived up there on Mont Eagle Mountain in Tennessee. Tupper would conduct a lot of seminars once or twice a year, and it would attract a lot of the people in the freedom movement. And, you know, that's where I began to meet people like Irwin Schiff and folks like that. But, you know, insofar as, you know, the early leaders in the freedom movement, you have people like Bob Muncaster, A.J. Porth, and people like that back in the early 80s. And from that, you had the beginnings of these organizations like the Golden Mean Society back in the late 70s and the early 80s. And also at the same time, you had, well, Steve and Sean got started with the Free Enterprise Society. They were out in California. But you also had National Commodity and Barter Association in Denver. And what John Pleasant, John Grand Bush with NCBA, what they were primarily doing, they were wanting to fight the Federal Reserve System. And they created these warehouse banks. And what a warehouse bank was is, you know, you would operate off of gold and silver coin instead of, you know, paper money. You would open up an account with a warehouse bank. The warehouse bank would act as your agent to, you know, you would give them your checks and they would, you know, cash them in and hold a, you know, they were your financial agent, so to speak. But you would try to keep as much money as you wanted or could in gold and silver at the bank. And so warehouse banks back in the mid 80s, they were kind of a hot, and there were a number of them all across the country. So, you know, in the beginning days, you know, you had FES, Peggy Christensen's Golden Mean Society, you had the NCBA in Denver. Those were the basic groups. Now, John Kottmeyer's group got started, you know, the SAP, Save a Patriot Fellowship, got started about 1987. The first time I met John was in 1984, I was on a research trip up to Washington, D.C. Bob Muncaster was with me. We decided to call John since we were up in D.C. And John came down from Maryland. And I remember meeting him on a sidewalk, one of those sidewalk cafes, you know, hot August in 1984 in Washington, D.C. And that's the first time I met John Kottmeyer. But, you know, but since that time, you know, there have been a number of groups. You know, there's kind of a story of an ebb and flow in the freedom movement. you know, for a while, there's been a lot of people talking about it. You know, the interest in the type these types of organizations would grow. You know, I can remember back, you know, when I ran into Bill Benson back in the mid-80s, you know, you had Norma Davenport was conducting weekly seminars, meetings up in Chicago. If you went to Dallas about this time, you know, there was around the clock every night, there would be something going on in Dallas. So there was a lot of activity in reference to the freedom movement circles that was going on back in the 80s and the 90s. In the early 90s, you had an organization started by Phil Marsh called the Pilot Connection Society. About that same time, you had Lynn Meredith comes along, and you know, she took the stuff that I was working on Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 jurisdiction and turned that into, you know, her business venture. You know, she operated from about 92 through about 2000 when, you know, the IRS came along and executed a bunch of search warrants and kind of ruined her business, and then she ultimately got prosecuted. Phil Marsh, he created the Pilot Connection Society in the late 80s. You know, Phil he wrote a book, you know, about outer space and stuff like that. People thought that was a neat book. But Phil Marsh, back in the late 80s, you know, he was just, he was destitute. You know, he'd feed himself by raiding the vineyard he lived next door to an apple orchard or a vineyard or something. He'd raid the vineyard at night to eat. But he wrote a book, and he built an organization, the Pilot Connection Society. And he went from, you know, living in with rags and went to riches, and he was making millions of dollars. You know, he started network marketing and selling franchises to his Pilot Connection Society. And there's always been an interest, you know, for some of these people, entrepreneurs like Phil Marsh, to take these issues and say, ah, man, I got to turn it into, you know, I got to market it. You know, that's exactly what Lynn Meredith did. You know, she took Article 1, Section 8, Clause, you know, she did a very poor job on trying to champion Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, my work. You know, she turned that into a business endeavor. And then she would sell trusts, and then she would combine, you know, good arguments with bad arguments. And, you know, whatever she could do to sell something, you know, sell trusts or whatever. And Phil Marsh was the same way. Phil Marsh sold the program, for $1,500. You know, I've got this, all you have to do is, you know, give us $1,500. You know, we'll prepare the paperwork. You'll mail to the IRS these, you know, tickets out of the system. And then you can also, I'll sell you a franchise. And that's and people would just, you know, fall all over themselves to, you know, pay that $1,500 and you know, exit the system. And boy, that's fantastic. You know, Austin Gary Cooper started doing the same thing back in the late 90s. I don't know whether did you ever run across Austin Gary Cooper?
I recognize the name, but I never ran across him. Was he in Dallas?
Well, he was down in Florida for a while, and then you had Eddie Kane down there in Florida.
Yeah.
But Austin Gary Cooper, you know, Austin Gary Cooper is kind of one of those, what I call a bad apple. He had the Take Back America. It was an organization down at Florida. You know, I've got some stuff over on my website. You know, you'd send him $1,500 and he'd prepare this program for you to take you out of United States citizenship into state citizenship. Boy, that was all you needed. You know, and wow, he was a work of art. You know, right now Austin Gary Cooper has gotten a whole bunch of people in Tennessee, eastern Tennessee, in deep trouble. A couple of years ago, Austin Gary Cooper just rolled in out of the blue and ran into these guys in eastern Tennessee and convinced them to, boy, they need to start filing liens against state officials. So I forgot that, you know, I've got this covered over my website. If you go over to my website that has this legal, you know, I have LarryBcraft.org, but that's just, you know, how to get in touch with me. I have the Dixieland Law Journal, which is the website where I have legal material posted, legal arguments, legal information. Now, if you go over there to the Dixieland Law Journal, you know, on the front page, you go down to, there's a link to a page called Problems, and you click on Problems, and then there's favorite patriot issues, and then scammers. and click on the scammers link. And that'll carry you over to, you know, there's a link to Austin Gary Cooper. And what I watched a couple of years ago, I mean, I ran into these guys maybe 7 or 8 years ago in Eastern Tennessee. And, you know, there were some good guys there. Now you have it on the screen. And it may be down toward the bottom. Austin Gary Cooper. Austin Gary Cooper got a lot of those guys filing liens against officials in Tennessee. And, you know, $25 million or whatever, you know, just large. Well, that resulted in all 10 of them. That's about how many there were. They got indicted. You know, indictments were returned to Nashville. And here earlier this year, those guys went to trial. Yeah, 10 arrested. That's Austin Gary Cooper's. You know, he was just kind of a wild and crazy and reckless. You know, he had his own war against the system, but, you know, he was just a ne'er-do-well that got a lot of people into trouble. You know, now he's, you know, I think he's about 69 years of age, and as a result of his conviction in this, the story that's on the screen right now, this case where you had 10 men up there in Eastern Tennessee got indicted, he got 25 years, and a bunch of the others got 22 years and 17 years, but you know, that's kind of crazy, you know, just to get people to, you know, they're mad at the system, you know, get them to do something stupid. And it's real easy to get a lot of people that are angry that get them fired up and get them to do something crazy. And, you know, now you're seeing the pictures of some of these guys at Austin Gary Cooper. Yeah, there he is. There's Austin Gary Cooper. So that's one of the problems of the movement. You know, they're justifiably, the American people have a real complaint against government. You know, here tonight, I'm glad I didn't watch any of last night, and I'm not watching anything tonight. You know, there'll be something on the news about it, but I'm sure that these, you know, Democrats are just going wild and crazy. You know, there's a lot of people that just simply do not like where this country is headed. And I call those people, certainly a lot of those are going to be Republicans, but then the more active are going to be patriots. And it's these types of people that have been anti-big government. These are the people that populate the freedom movement. And over the years, there had just been various groups like NCBA, the Golden Mean Society, Free Enterprise Society, Save a Patriot Fellowship, and others. You know, there have been some real good organizations that have done a lot of good, but then at the same time, you've just had out there a lot of charlatans. You know, you may not remember him, but old Thurston Bell used to work for John Kottmeyer at Save a Patriot Fellowship. Then he left and started his own program. And, you know, that guy was just a real, real work. You know, he was hard to get along with, and he was egotistical, and, you know, nobody in the world knew about how to do anything except Thurston Bell. But then Thurston Bell in the early 2000s got and joined, like a lot of other people in the movement. But, you know, you've got good organizations, you've got bad organizations. And, you know, here in the last 10 years, we've had, who was it? Dr. Sam Kennedy.
Oh.
Back in about 2006, all the way up to 2008. You know, you file these types of tax returns that were advocated by Winston Trout and Roger Elvick. And, you know, I can remember going to meetings and, you know, back in those days, boy, these people, wow, man, I've got $100,000 or I got $600,000, you know, doing this, you know, file these fake returns with the IRS to get back big bucks. And then those people got pursued by the IRS criminally and civilly, you know, but, That Sam Kennedy 1099 OID program was wild and crazy. You know, that's just one of them. There are a lot of men, people, organizations that, you know, are not, I call them shady. And I try to find out who those people are and warn others about them. But then there are a lot of good organizations, have been a lot of good organizations. You know, Golden Mean Society, you know, everybody associated with it was, Everybody was associated with NCBA. Everybody, Steve and Sean with the Free Enterprise Society. John Kottmeyer and his organization. Those have been good people. You know, people that, you know, the government wants to sit there and say, oh, gee, they're a bunch of tax protesters. No, these are people that have sat down and looked at the law, and like they, everybody has a right to study and reach their own opinion. And, you know, these people have reached their own opinions, and there are a lot of great, good opinions. Those are the people that are, well, I'll call the good people inside the freedom movement. But then you got the bad side of the freedom movement. The bad side of the freedom movement is people like Sam Kennedy, Tim Turner, Winston Shrout, Roger Elvick, you know, people that are Austin Gary Cooper. You know, I try to warn people about those, but you know, up here on the screen, we got Anna Von Reitz. You know, she came along about 4 or 5 years ago. And let me just tell you, people have sent me her materials. They say, look at this lady, man. She's just fantastic. No, all Anna Von Reitz does is invent stuff. She will, you know, she's been involved in the movement long enough to know, you know, some of the kind of the theories that kind of float around. And she knows how, you know, people can be deceived. And that's exactly what she does. She deceives people. She makes things up. And she'll sit there and look at, you know, you've got it on the screen. You know, I've taken what's on the screen right here is over on Crackpot Artie Rosner's website, Scanned Retina. He was a big follower of Anna Von Reitz, so he promotes her various arguments. So I've just taken the arguments. They're still posted on Arnie Rosner's website, Scanned Retina, and I analyze them. And she just makes them up. And there are a lot of people in this movement, they want to get attention to themselves, so they make something up. And that's exactly what Anna Von Reitz does. She just makes stuff up. And so I take some of the arguments that are still posted over on Arnie Rosner's website, and I address them. She makes them up. And there are a lot of people in that are associated in some way with this movement that just make stuff up. You know, they are marketeers. They are charlatans. They are scammers. So, you know, my position is this. There's a sizable segment of the American population that has a justifiable cause, a justifiable reason to dislike what's going on in this country. So they start looking into matters. How are they going to change what's going on here in America? Those are the people that are, they want to find out what's going on. They want to learn something, and they want to bring about positive change. Those are the people I support. Then in contrast to those, we've got these, you know, con men that come out here and, you know, hey, like here on this screen, the Freedom Club USA. Wow. I mean, if you want to talk about some real scammers, that hey, they have this, you know, way to, they have this private system that they've got set up. You will acquire a lien against, a claim against one of your adversaries through their private litigation court system, and you'll end up with a lien. And then once you pay them about $3,000 to get a lien against the IRS or whoever, you know, they've been waiting for at least 10 years. You know, it's always been just around the corner, but there's some big Saudi or some big organization offshore is going to come along and buy your private claim that exists only in the records of the Freedom Club USA, you know, in their vaults and their, you know, but once that happens, boy, this offshore entity is going to buy your claim against the IRS for $10 million, and boy, you're just going to be in high cotton. And that's what Freedom Club USA does. It's a real scam. So we need to watch out for the scams. Those are the people that harm this movement, and we need to support that which is just. People that are straight, people that are honest. And I'm just attempting to show people ones I think that are to be avoided. So, Joe, that's I spent about 25 minutes going over a background, what's happened in the movement. You know, this is the good, bad, and the ugly. And I think the good needs to be supported, and I think we need to identify the bad and the ugly, expose it, and get rid of it. That's what I try to do.
Definitely.
Gary, do you have any comments about what Larry presented?
Well, you know, I went to a meeting, I think it was like in the late 80s in Dallas, and I still got their business card. It was two guys that put on a meeting, and they seemed to be sincere about it, but of course, you know, most of them appear to be sincere when they start up anyway. But I didn't really hang out in the movement. I got on the internet around 1992, 1993 in the music business, and you know, the bulletin board services, they call them BBSs back then, and you know, people talk about taxes and things, and but at the end of the day, I just didn't really do much about it until around 2002, 2003. I had a good friend I used to play music with down in Texas, and he was in an organization called the Republic of Texas organization, and we hung out a little bit, but I pretty much stayed out of the movement. I had heard about Larry, and I remember telling, you know, my old buddy's name was Bob Miller. I told Bob, I said, I'd like to meet that old crazy lawyer named Larry Beecraft. He sounds like a pretty good character. Then all of a sudden, I was playing music in L.A. and then found out about a guy by the name of Tommy Cryer's case. And I just loaded up and moved back to Shreveport. Cause, I mean, I was originally from Shreveport. And, you know, my stepfather had passed away, and everybody's trying to get me to move back, and it gave me a good enough excuse to do it.
Hey, and we welcome that to help, Gary.
Absolutely. You know, I did the best I could, but I remember the very first thing, and I got to tell you all this funny. This is funny.
You don't have to tell that story.
Yeah, I do. The very first day I met Larry, Tommy and I were standing out in front of his office, and you know, up comes Larry, and I'm wearing a pair of gym shorts and a Hawaiian shirt, and Larry gets out of this car, and he's wearing a suit just like he's wearing tonight, and I felt God, here I am meeting Larry Beecraft, you know, one of the best lawyers in the country, and here I am, you know, standing here in a Hawaiian shirt and a pair of cutoffs, you know, and
it's what you need to wear.
So the next day I put on a pair of nice khaki pants and a white shirt, all crisp and everything, and went up, met Larry up at Tommy's office, and then Larry shows up in a pair of gym shorts and a Hawaiian shirt. That's a true story.
And
the rest is history.
Well, one thing that always fascinated me about Tom Cryer is that he didn't, you know, he didn't join any group or movement. He just had his law partner tell him about the income tax. And from
George was associated with John Kottmeyer's Save a Patriot Fellowship.
George Harp, yeah.
Well, and George is the one that introduced Tommy to these issues. And Tommy said, oh, you know, you're going to get into trouble. You're wrong. And so George gives Tommy the legal argument, are you liable? And Tommy spends a lot of time, you know, maybe about 2 months, you know, in the law library trying to prove that the guy that he's practicing law with is crazy. You know, of course you're required to file returns. And then Tommy does some digging around and, well, who's liable for the income tax? And average American's not liable. And he just scratches his head. Wow, well, George is right.
Yeah,
which meant that Larry was right, because Larry did all that research.
Well, you know, but here's the problem we got. The way I see it, you know, there's a lot of people, they go about, you know, law is different from what a lot of people do every day. But it is important. You know, I think it's important. You know, I would like to see in school, in addition to something about civics and government lessons, you know, I think then in those types of courses, there ought to be something taught to our, you know, high school students a little bit about law. You know, I find today that there is an institutional interest on the part of government to not educate people about legal materials.
Zero.
And there's a lot of there's a lot of law that people can understand. And if we had a little bit more, if we had a populace that had a background, at least a high school background in law, we would be further down the road. And it would be a lot easier for people, you know, if they had decades of memory about law and they'd seen it in their daily lives. You know, you see law every day, you know, if you know something about law. It's just like if you know something about history, you see history being made every day. If you know something about government, you see how government operates every day. You know, if you know something about law, you get to see law every day. And with that type of a background, you know, we would have an educated populace. But there's a concerted effort for people to not be legally educated. And, you know, I think that one of the things I try to do, that's the reason why over on my website, you've got so much legal materials. You know, I'm trying to educate people about these important issues. And we have some real good issues. And once you understand the issues, like Tommy did, you know, you start setting forth the position of the American people in reference to a lot of these issues, you know, a freedom point, you can see that we're being taken advantage of by government.
Every day of the week.
Yep.